GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1358, June 18, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Gas City, Indiana. I unloaded late last night there at Harrisburg and then sort of ignored the load that they sent right away after I sent the empty message. And, you know, I told them that I'd be ready to go about noon, and so set my alarm for 10:45, and so I got up at 10:45 Eastern time, and then so I got up, and they had sent a different load offer, the daytime people. Well, I take that back. At 7:30 in the morning, the dispatcher sent a message: "Are you awake?" You know, "No, I'm not awake." You know, I guess they don't read the messages, because when I sent the empty message, you know, there's a comment field in there, and I put in there, you know, plan time of availability 12 noon. And apparently they just kind of ignored that or whatever, and the daytime dispatcher comes in there and doesn't pay attention to what time the load got unloaded. You know, you got to take a 10-hour break. I'd been driving to get there. Have to take a 10-hour break. So, of course, you know, there was a couple of messages there. "Are you awake?" Well, no. So I just, whenever I woke up, I looked at the Qualcomm, saw those messages, and I sent a message saying, "Whoops, just woke up." And then they sent this load offer. It picked up there in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, which is in the area. And it delivers at, let's see, was it 5 a.m.? 5 a.m. Eastern time at here at Gas City, Indiana. And so actually I'll be able to go in there, let's see, in about an hour and a half. It's 1:30, so it would be 2:30 Eastern time right now. So I can go in there at 4 o'clock, so 1:30, 2:30. 3, that's confusing, 1:30, 2:33, yeah, so in about an hour and a half I can go in there, because they want you to come in an hour early. So if the appointment's at 5 o'clock Eastern, you can go in there at 4 o'clock Eastern. So in any case, I had to get the trailer washed out and fill the trailer up that I was going to drop with fuel, and then go to the place where I did the drop and hook. Then I filled the truck up with fuel, and then got underway, and it's about roughly a 550 mile drive from there to here. And once I get unloaded, right now I'm at a Hardee's or whatever, and I think there's a little truck stop, fuel stop on the other side of the interstate. So once I get the load unloaded, then I'll come back over here and it'll be time to sleep. So and I'm going to make sure that I set the plan time of availability fairly late, because I have to take a 10-hour break, and I'm going to take more than a 10-hour break, because I want to be able to sleep. And then of course I'm sure they're going to come up with some He'll probably come up with some load that, oh, you got to hurry, go pick it up, and then you have to hurry to get it to wherever it goes. And that seems to be the type of loads that we have right now. So, in any case, before I go on, let me go ahead and forgot to talk about last night the Your Baby Can Read program. And so I want to talk about that right now while I'm thinking about it. Your Baby Can Read is a truly revolutionary infant reading system. It was developed by a leading infant researcher, Dr. Robert Titzer, who taught his own daughter to read when she was just 9 months old. Your Baby Can Read taps into children's natural ability to learn a language in the first 5 years of life. The reading system includes videos, books, flashcards, and games. Go to www.yourbabycanread.com/podcast to watch real home videos of infants and toddlers reading, a 6-month-old recognizing words on flashcards, an 18-month-old reading sentences, a toddler reading Charlotte's Web. Try it yourself risk-free and see what your child can do. Visit www.yourbabycanread.com/podcast. Give the gift of lifelong early literacy to your child. And so let me close that. There we go. So I've got some audio clips that Scott sent me. These are fairly short audio clips that Scott sent me a few days ago. But then I've got a little bit of, you know, I cleaned the email out in last night's podcast. I cleaned that all out. But I got a couple of emails here that are relevant to what I played that Bob Etheridge, that congressman from North Carolina, I played that clip, the audio of the video that I embedded in the show notes for the last episode, where, you know, the congressman was basically assaulting the college students. The college students, it happened in Washington, D.C. The college students were waiting for Congressman Etheridge to come along. So here he was, you know, they've got their flip cam, actually a couple of flip cams, because they've actually got videos from a couple of different angles that you can watch. But in any case, here comes the congressman, you know, hi, congressman, how are you? You know, and he's, you know, keeps walking, and then when the congressman gets up to them, he asks the one kid asks, there's one college kid, there's a couple of them at least, asked him, congressman, do you support the Obama agenda? And the congressman immediately grabs one of the cameras, knocks it out of the kid's hand, and then grabs that one guy's wrist that asked the question, and, who are you? Who are you? And then when the kid won't tell him his name, the congressman grabs the kid by the neck, the back of the neck, and I mean he really grabs it. You can see it in the video. And there are people that are defending that. There are people say, well, if somebody shoved a camera in my face, I'd be doing the same thing. Okay, just stop. Just stop. Now let's get real. Let's make this relevant to your life and to my life. Now, I deal sometimes with frustrating situations day in and day out, and a lot of people that have driven trucks get all frustrated. They get all frustrated with shippers and receivers and people in, the clerks that work behind the counters and truck stops. I see it all the time. People don't want, you know, they get mad because they have to wait in line, or they don't, you know, there's a million different reasons why people get mad, you know, because things aren't going their way. And sometimes those clerks can be rude, and sometimes those, the clerks at the truck stops and the clerks at the shipping and receiving offices can be rude. And, now if I, as a truck driver, were to grab... Let's say I'm in a truck stop and I don't like, you know, the person's attitude or whatever. They're not telling me what I want to hear. or let's say I'm in a fast food joint and somebody, you know, says, well, I'm sorry, we don't have that. Or they screw my order up and I grab them by the wrist. you know, and start, you know, just being rude to them and get right in their face. And then I escalated and I grabbed them by the back of the neck. Do you know what would happen to me? If I was a shipper or receiver and I did that to a shipper or receiver, regardless of my side of the story, I'd be fired instantly. As soon as the company found out about it, I'd be gone. They would not tolerate me even touching a shipper or receiver in that sort of circumstance where I was being belligerent. You don't touch people. You know, and just being belligerent would get me fired, and rightly so. And probably land in jail. Same way with, if that happened at a truck stop. They'd call the police immediately. Of course they would. And I'm sure they probably have to from time to time. I'm sure it's probably not real often, but I'm sure that over a course of long period of time, it probably happens that they have to call the police. I would be fired. I'd land in jail. And if you did it, you would too. Now, how can you excuse a congressman doing the same thing, actually reaching out and grabbing somebody? In order to do that, to defend that kind of behavior, you have to be insane. There are some insane people in the media and others that have sympathy for bullies, basically, because if you're of that mindset where you kind of want to defend the congressman, you know, as sort of the victim, because they were doing an ambush interview, you know, and then there are people that are trying to discredit the college student because Breitbart.com or BigGovernment.com posted the video 3 days after it was up on YouTube. You know, and they're trying to associate the two and sort of discredit the college students for doing that. You have sympathy for bullies. I can't, you know, if I engaged in that kind of behavior, I'd instantly be fired and I'd land in jail. And you would too. Yet there are some people that want to excuse that kind of behavior. It's insanity. So anyway, getting to the email here, Joey. This was from Facebook because I linked when I posted the video in my show notes. I clicked on the Facebook link in YouTube to post it. The video also to my Facebook account, and so Joey had commented on the link to the video. Says, "You're right." Excuse me. "You're right, and Bob Etheridge had no right. Glad he didn't give his name." He's talking about the college student. "God bless YouTube, eh? Until net neutrality fails us anyway." And then Arnold, so thank you, Joey, for that link, and then for commenting on the link. And Arnold in North Carolina says, "Hi, Tom. Hope you're doing well out there. Here's another ridiculous incident at school." And he's got a link that to a news story I'm going to read here in a minute. "Can you imagine the horror of a plastic army man? We should have been locked up as kids for playing with him, I guess." And he says, "P.S. Not ashamed of Congressman," he's got Congressman in quotes, "Etheridge. Since I didn't vote for him, nor could I, since he's not in my district, but I am outraged and disgusted. I say lock his ass up for assault." Because that would happen to me. That would happen to Arnold if Arnold did that. That would happen to Joey if he did that. It would happen to anybody if they engaged in that kind of behavior. especially at work. You'd be fired. Company's not going to put up with that. Why should we put up with it? Because it's the government. You know, and then someone else, there was another post on YouTube, and he says, well, I agree. You know, at first kind of came across as wanting to defend the congressman and then started talking about how bad Bush was, you know, kind of excusing the behavior. And then I kind of pointed out to him, hey, I'd be fired if I did that, and so would you. Then he kind of came back and, you know, was kind of bashing on Bush again. But you know, and then he says, well, I agree that, you know, the congressman should, you know, he should lose his job or whatever. But how are you going to do it? You know, you have to, people have to vote him out. How are you going to fire the congressman? Well, first of all, you got to get your own mind right. And that's what's wrong with people. People's minds are not right. People are willing to excuse bad behavior in their own personal lives. And that's the real root of the problem. We can whine and moan and groan about our leaders all day long, and they're bad enough. We've elected the wrong ones. There's no question about it. We've elected the absolute wrong people to Congress, for the most part, and the wrong person is in the White House. And it's going to be a miracle if we have the midterm elections in November, if they're not canceled. There's a very real danger that something so horrendous is going to happen that they'll cancel. It'll be the perfect opportunity for them to cancel the midterm elections. So it's going to be a miracle if we have those elections. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope you're able to come back and say, ha ha ha, Tom, you were wrong. We had the elections. Ha ha ha. I hope that happens. So anyway, let me go ahead and read this article, the link to which Arnold sent. Toy soldiers run afoul of school's weapons ban. This is Providence, Rhode Island. Christian Morales said her son just wanted to honor American troops when he wore a hat to school decorated with an American flag and small plastic army figures. But the school banned the hat because it ran afoul of the district's zero-tolerance weapons policy. Why? The toy soldiers were carrying tiny guns. His teacher called and said it wasn't appropriate, Morales said. Morales' 8-year-old son, David, had been assigned to make a hat for the day when his second-grade class would meet their pen pals from another school. She and her son came up with an idea to add patriotic decorations to the camouflage hat. Earlier this week, after the hat was banned, the principal at the Tiogue school in Coventry told the family that the hat would be fine if David replaced the army men holding weapons with ones that didn't have any. According to the superintendent, Kenneth R. DiPietro, Morales said the family had only one army figure without a weapon. He was carrying binoculars. So David wore a plastic baseball cap on the day of the pen pal meeting. Nothing was being done to limit patriotism, creativity, other than find an alternative to a weapon, DiPietro said. The district does not allow images of weapons or drugs on clothing. For example, a student would not be permitted to wear a shirt with a picture of a marijuana leaf on it, the superintendent said. The principal wasn't denying the patriotism, he said. That's just the wrong and unfair image of one of our finest principals. On Thursday, DiPietro and the principal met with the retired commander of the Rhode Island National Guard at the commander's request. Lieutenant General Reginald Centracchio praised the school system for supporting the military in the past, including a junior ROTC program. But he said he disagreed with the decision to ban the hat and hoped it offered a chance for the school to review its policies. The American soldier is armed. That's why they're called the armed forces, he said. If you're going to portray it in any other way, you miss the point. He said he intends to give David a medal to express veterans' appreciation, that he would pay tribute to their service. Morales said her son was inspired to honor the military after striking up a friendship last summer with a neighbor in the Army. Banning the hat sent the wrong message to the kids because it wasn't in any way to cause any harm to anyone, she said. You're talking about Army men. This wasn't about guns. And it's just another reason. You know, the school system is corrupted. And you send your kids, you're sending your kids, if you send your kids to public school, you're sending them to the cesspit. You're sending them to a cesspool. And chances are, their minds are going to be corrupted. Furthermore, if you know that the school's bad, you know the public school's bad, but then you come up with all kinds of excuses. Oh, I don't have enough money. Oh, I'm poor. Oh, I can't afford to send them to a private school. Oh, I can't afford to take the time to homeschool them, or to come up with some kind of alternative. But yet you can afford all kinds of computers and cars and iPods and cable TV and God knows what else. You don't love your kids. That's really the bottom line. You don't love your kids. You really don't. When it comes right down to it, you don't love your kids. And I'm not talking about the kissy kissy huggy huggy type of love. That's not love. There may be a few decent public schools. You know, I can't say that they're all terrible. They're all bad. They're varying degrees. But for the most part, they're corrupted. And they're just going to screw your kid's mind. And then I found this other story that's just kind of portrays how insane our leadership is, and I'm talking about the federal leadership, from the president on down. BP oil spill against Governor Jindal's wishes, crude-sucking barges stopped by Coast Guard. 8 days ago, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal ordered barges to begin vacuuming crude oil out of his state's oil-soaked waters. Today, against the governor's wishes, those barges sat idle even as more oil flowed toward the Louisiana shore. It's the most frustrating thing, the Republican governor said today in Barras, Louisiana. Literally yesterday morning, we found out that they were halting all of these barges. 16 barges sat stationary today, although they were sucking up thousands of gallons of BP oil as recently as Tuesday. Workers in hazmat suits and gas masks pumped the oil out of the Louisiana waters and into the steel tanks. It was a homegrown idea that seemed to be effective at collecting the thick gunk. These barges work. You've seen them work. You've seen them suck oil out of the water, said Jindal. Coast Guard orders barges to stop. So why stop now? The Coast Guard came and shut them down, Jindal said. You got men on the barges in the oil, and they have been told by the Coast Guard, cease and desist, stop sucking up that oil. A Coast Guard representative told ABC News today that it shares the same goal as the governor. We are all in this together. The enemy is the oil. No, the enemy is in your head, said Coast Guard Lieutenant Commander Dan Lauer. But the Coast Guard ordered the stoppage because of reasons that Jindal found frustrating. The Coast Guard needed to confirm that there were fire extinguishers and life vests on board, and then it had trouble contacting the people who built the barges. Red tape? Do you think they were, probably Obama sent them. make, they want that spill as bad as possible. They want that disaster as bad as they can possibly make it, so that you'll get frustrated, and then you get frustrated, then they can move in for the kill. Louisiana governor couldn't overrule the Coast Guard. The governor said he didn't have the authority to overrule the Coast Guard decision, though he said he tried to reach the White House to raise concerns. "They promised us they were going to get it done as quickly as possible," he said, "but every time you talk to someone different at the Coast Guard, you get a different answer." After Jindal strenuously made his case, the barges finally got the go-ahead today to return to the Gulf and get back to work after more than 24 hours of sitting idle. And we're waiting for page 2 to load. I bet iTunes probably started downloading something. Let's see. Yep, let me pause that. Yeah, let's just pause that and see if I can get this page to load. Oh, there we go. Along Gulf Coast, governors ask who's in charge. 59 days into the crisis, it can still be tough to figure out who's in charge in Louisiana. And the problem appears to be the same in all other Gulf Coast states. In Alabama today, Governor Bob Riley said he's had problems with the Coast Guard, too. Riley, Republican Alabama, asked the Coast Guard to find ocean boom tall enough to handle strong waves and protect a shoreline. The Coast Guard went all the way to Bahrain to find it, but when it came to time to deploy it, it was picked up and moved to Louisiana, Riley said. The governor said the problem is there is still no single person giving a yes or no. While the Gulf Coast governors have developed plans with the Coast Guard's command center in the Gulf, things begin to shift when other agencies start weighing in, like the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. "It's like this huge committee down here," Riley said, "and every decision that we try to implement, any one person on that committee has absolute veto power." And there you go. Our country is insane. Government is insane. The bats have gotten into the belfry. We're not free anymore. We don't live in a free country anymore. And we're just this close to being in a real full-fledged dictatorship. So anyway, let me go ahead, and I've got some comments here from Scott. Haven't listened to these, so may end up doing a stop-start. This first one is 2 minutes 45 seconds.
You're talking about cell sites having to upgrade for, you know, one from 3G to 4G and things like that, and how it's not all as easy as you might think. Boy, it isn't, believe me, Tom. And in fact, I saw a special, I think it was on a television show. Either that or it was on the internet, but I think it was on a TV show. And it was about these people that climb up these towers, and that it's an extremely specialized job. That there are these towers that go way up there, and there's quite a few of them, and it takes a very special kind of a person to go up on these towers and do work, you know, replace things, do the various types of work. Many people have died, many people have gotten hurt. It's an extremely specialized form of work. And I'm sure you've heard of the show called The Deadliest Catch, because it's a job that is just extremely deadly. Well, the same is true of this tower stuff. It's a job that is just fraught with the potential to be deadly or you know, devastating to your health in all kinds of different ways. So you might, you know, you might want to look on YouTube, on Netflix, on wherever, to look into that, because you'd be amazed at what's involved in physically upgrading these towers, because somebody has to get up there. They have to stay out of the way of high power transmitters that can fry you if you get in the way of the signal, because it's almost like microwave. There's a lot of dangers, not the least of which obviously is being way up there and falling. Wind blows, you know, they do it in all different kinds of weather. They're under really tight timetables, and so, you know, it happens to be freezing today with ice, you're going to go up anyway, because they're under some strict timetables. They get big money. These guys get big money. But some of the guys that do it, the show I had was about this gal who maintained a bunch of people who did this. And one of the guys was a drunken fool. You know, he'd go out to parties and get totally ripshit. And, you know, he was a real moron of a guy, but he was gutsy. And when he got up on that tower, he was just real good at what he did, and they kept him around because of that. But in his actual life, he was just a total idiot. And so you find that that happens just because of the type of person you need to do this job. So, yeah, you know, I can't remember what the name of that show was, but it's something you might want to look into, because I think you would find it interesting. Just a thought.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. I haven't watched that particular show. Now, I have watched that Deadliest Catch, or at least a little bit of it. There are jobs, and usually they pay pretty well, but there are jobs that are extremely dangerous, you know, obviously, you know. Now, I have watched some, you know, where they, you know, the guy's working on the electrical lines, and they fly him into the, you know, the great big giant ones. They fly him up, you know, drop him off on with a helicopter and so on and so forth, and it's extremely dangerous. You know, they have to repair things on those giant lines, and you know, they make, you know, they're obviously, they're paid well to do that, and I don't know, you'd have to want, that's the kind of thing you'd have to really be motivated to do, you know. And a lot of those guys, you know, that do that kind of work, I'm sure there are some of them that are just in their personal lives or shambles, you know, not necessarily, but you know, you never know. So anyway, those I don't know, some of those shows are interesting. You know, it would be kind of interesting, you know, to, if there could be some kind of a, even if it was not a very long lasting show, but just some show that kind of showed, even, you know, like on the Discovery Channel or Learning Channel, one of those channels, even the History Channel, if they'd show how cell sites are put together and all of the work that goes in, that's involved in setting up a cell site and, you know, upgrading them and so on and so forth, I think that would be pretty interesting. You know, because we just kind of take those things for granted, you know, and it's amazing if you stop and think, you know, all of the cell sites, you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of them, you know, and they're just positioned, you know, every, you know, I don't know how close together they are, probably every couple of miles there's a cell site. They're just all over the place, and not necessarily just along major roads, but they're all over the place. And, you know, it's really a tremendous amount of effort has gone into installing those and then continuing to keep them running. And, you know, it's really quite an amazing thing when you think about it. So, anyway, Scott sent us the second comment. There's two more remaining. The second one is 2 minutes and 33 seconds. So here we go.
Okay, Tom, hi. I listened to your podcast here, and you played a clip of this birthday of Obama and Helen Thomas, and then another clip where she talks about the Jews should get out, you know. And I guess that indicating that, you know, she's anti-Semitic. But in any case, that being the case, you know, she's a reporter, and you were implying that she's biased and how horrible that is. my question to you is, do you honestly believe that there are any unbiased reporters out there?
Okay, let me interrupt. No, there's no such thing as an unbiased human being. But, you know, and I thought I made the point clearly, you know, I'm biased. I tend to be the right wing. I tend to be conservative. You know, but I'm not trying to hide it. I come right out and I say, hey, I'm conservative. You know, and if it's a, you know, especially if I'm starting to talk politics and give my opinion, I tell you, I repeat it over and over again, I am conservative. You know, take my, you know, you know, just take that into account. I am conservative. I'm not trying to pretend that I'm an objective reporter and so on and so forth. Helen Thomas, on the other hand, has spent all of these years trying to pretend like she's objective. And, you know, pretend like she doesn't have any opinion. You know, she's a reporter. She's above that. And come to find out, she does have an opinion. And it's way far left. Now, we all kind of knew that, but even so, you know, typically these people hide their, you know, they hide who they are. And, you know, in this case, they're just kind of getting bold and they're coming right out in her case and just kind of saying, hey, you know, and it was a rabbi that asked her, this rabbi at whatever meeting this was, there was a rabbi and he had his camera, probably a flip camera, had his video camera out there, and he said, I'm asking all the people here today their opinion, and she said, well, I think that the Jews should just get the hell out of Israel, just get the hell out. Well, where are they going to go? Oh, just scatter, go to different countries, go home to different countries, go back to Germany and Poland and the United States and everywhere. You know, and that caused her. She ended up having to resign because there were some people. You know, I was talking to Ron yesterday, and Ron Stroop was. He thought that she said it after she resigned, and that wasn't the case. She said that, and there was such a firestorm because that was perceived as very anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic, and. That ended up causing her to resign. So, anyway, let me go ahead and go on. But there is no such thing as an unbiased human being. But the people in the news, you know, if they're going to come out there and say, you know, try to pretend like they don't have any opinion when they report the news, you know, they should be required to just really state what their opinion is. You know, or at least state their leanings, and then you can kind of make an adjustment for it instead of trying to present themselves as being, you know, just after the facts. And of course, you know, they do twist things around. You know, that one of the articles I read in last night's podcast, you know, the guy was just kind of dancing all over trying to make it seem like this Etheridge thing wasn't as bad as it is. You know, and, you know, they'll omit facts, they'll twist things around, try to present just enough information so you'll come to their conclusions, the same conclusions that they hold.
That are any less biased than she is? And who are they? You know, I would bet that there's not a single reporter that doesn't have some strong viewpoints in one direction or another. And, so if you would agree with that, then what would make her any worse than any other reporter to receive condemnation for her real viewpoints? Because if they all have bias in their real life, so to speak, quote-unquote real life, then is it possible to do your job in an unbiased way? And that's
okay. Now, the reason that people got so upset, because, you know, she came out and she told us who she was. If she would have been telling us who she was all along, she would have been probably never had the job to begin with. Think about that. You know, whenever she went to work, you know, whenever it was 40 years ago or whatever, she would have never gotten the job. Or she wouldn't have had it very long, especially if she'd been telling the public exactly what she thought. But she was keeping that under wraps because she knew that that was bad. And a lot of these people, we'd be turning them off. If they came right out and said what their real feelings were, we would be turning them off. Now, a lot of people have learned to kind of read between the lines, and that's why, you know, the news media is, the so-called mainstream media, newspapers, television, so on and so forth, they're losing their readers. They're losing their viewers because people, you know, they know it's propaganda. They're being fed propaganda in many instances. Sometimes, you know, a lot of it is proven, like in that Dan Rather case, that was just an out-and-out lie. It was a made-up story about George W. Bush. And, you know, completely fake documents. And they faked them in Microsoft Word, which didn't even exist in the you know, these documents were supposed to be from the 1970s. You know, so they typed them up in Microsoft Word and used the default font and then ran it through a fax machine a bunch of times so that they looked dirty, you know, so that they kind of gave an aged appearance. And I actually downloaded the PDF of the purported documents, and I typed the thing up in myself in my own copy of Microsoft Word, and it matched exactly. How stupid are these people? You know, and here's Dan Rather. Oh, I stand behind this. These are real documents. You know? He ended up losing his job over that, and he should have. A lot of these people are committing treason, and they should go to jail. Because they're a big part of the problem. But if she would come out, if she would have came out a long time ago and said, you know, told us her real feelings, she would have been gone. And as I say, a lot of these other ones, if they were really honest with who they were and what they thought, they wouldn't be on the air.
Another question I'd ask you: do you believe you, Thomas Wiles, you know, you've got your biases, and I got mine. We all do. Do you think you could nonetheless do an unbiased, a version, I'm not saying this right, do you think that you could do reporting in an unbiased way and just sort of step outside your own opinions and look at it, or is it impossible? There'd always be some bias there. My opinion on that is that there would always be some of you there.
Well, let me interrupt. Now, the problem is, a lot of times, they're mixing their opinion with the news. You know, in the case of newspapers, one of the main reasons why all of a lot of these left-wing newspapers have lost their audience and are still in the process of losing their audiences is because they've moved the opinion page to the front page. You know, now in many instances they simply repeat what, you know, it's their stories out of the New York Times, but they've kind of moved the opinion page to the front page. And people are, you know, you can read a story, you know, and just describe something that happens. You know, they're there, a reporter's function, a journalist's function, is to report something, you know, to report, you know, they're there on the street corner, something happens, they're there, you're not, they're there to, if they're doing their job properly, they're there to tell you what happened. You know, and you can do that by just kind of concentrating on the facts. Just report the facts. This happened, that happened. But oftentimes they twist things. and they screw things around. And I do believe it is possible to just report the facts, but the problem is they mix their own opinions in there, or they'll completely leave facts out, you know, and that happens a lot. Or in the case of photographs here the other day, Reuters was caught, you know, this thing that happened with Israel. Reuters actually altered the photographs so that it made Israel seem like they were the bad guys and these guys that were attacking their boat the good guys, when it was actually the other way around. And they were caught. And they've, you know, there's been instances where reporters in Iraq were, and it's been probably a couple of years ago, reporters in Iraq were doctoring photographs to make them, you know, to kind of adding elements in there so that into the photograph with Photoshop in order to, you know, make a picture that didn't actually exist. You know, to make it seem more dramatic and sort of back up, the, you know, to sort of manipulate the people reading the story, sort of manipulate how they, you know, their feelings about it. The feelings about the war and how wrong it was and so on and so forth. So it is possible to just report the facts. And really, that wouldn't matter if you're left wing or right wing. I do believe that if someone has any integrity at all, no matter what their political leanings, they could just report the facts. But the problem is, they're not doing that in many instances.
And that's part of being human. We can try as best we can to do an unbiased and fair and balanced job, but it's never going to happen. So I guess my point of view would be that she's no worse or better than any other reporter, and that I think anybody who reports, you couldn't do unbiased reporting if you wanted to. But you can get it down to a point where it's reasonable, good enough. That's what I always talk about, good enough. And I think that you can do. And then the question becomes, was the job that she did good enough? And that's just basically talking about the kind of job she was doing more than it is talking about her personal bias.
I don't know. Again, not to beat a dead horse in the ground, but it is possible to just report facts. But, you know, you can, if you know how, you know, I don't know. I've always been able to write pretty well and just really express myself in a written word. And so therefore, when I read a story, you know, this editing process is always kind of going on in my mind. And when I read a story, you know, I can kind of see, you know, the person, you know, how it's written, what words they're using, how those words are structured, I can kind of see where the person is, what they're trying to communicate. And I can usually tell pretty quickly, as in that one story that I read from the Washington Post last night, I can tell pretty quickly, you know, if someone's rationalizing something in their mind and they're trying to get the reader to, they're trying to sell the reader on the same rationalization. You know, and a lot of these stories, these news stories, instead of simply reporting the facts, they're trying to sell a point of view. And that's the problem. You know, if Helen Thomas, you know, wanted to, you know, she has her opinion or whatever, but I guarantee you she's trying to, you know, over the years she's tried to sell her own point of view. You know, and what's ironic, you know, oh, she was the dean of the White House press corps. You know, and she received all these honors, and they were just all fawning over her, and so on and so forth. And then here she is, you know, she, you know, anti-Semitism is a big deal. you know, and it has been for years. And it's just, again, if she would have been honest right up front, she wouldn't have been where she was. She lied to get to where she was. How many people do that? How many people lie? How many people do you know in your personal life that lie to hold the positions that they hold? You know, their jobs or whatever, or their social standing. I don't know that many people that do that, you know, and it's probable that because I'm honest and I try to be as genuine as possible with everyone, that I chase those people away before there's ever any chance that I'm going to get involved with anybody like that. But I really don't know too many people that lie. You know, I can't think of any people, you know, in my entire life, I can't really think of anybody that I've known that has lied to get where they are, to hold a, you know, let's say a job, to lie to hold a job, or to lie to stay in a job. And that's basically, you know, anti-Semitism is a big deal. How many people, now let's just stop and think about this a little more. In your own personal life, how many people do you know that are anti-Semitic? How many people do you know that have expressed to you the opinion that, you know, that Jews are bad and they should leave, you know, they should all just scatter, Israel shouldn't exist? Do you know anybody like that? Now, I've had people over the years, and I really don't remember them, but I've had people that, they weren't my friends, but I've heard people say that, you know, talk about Jews and so on and so forth, and that they're stingy, and you know, and I've heard people talk that way. Not all that much, but you know, if somebody starts talking that way to me, you know, and I won't even carry on a conversation with them, much less become friends with them. How many people do you personally, are you friends with anybody that is just blatantly anti-Semitic and just kind of tells you what they think about, you know, they're really honest, if they really think that way? You know, it's just, and same thing as, you know, people start talking about blacks. You know, because over the years I ran into people that talk about blacks and they use the N-word and stuff, and I don't want anything to do with people like that. My mind doesn't work that way. You know, but do you have any friends that talk that way? You know, about any group? My mind doesn't work that way. You know, and I know those people are out there, but who do they appeal to? Obviously like-minded people. So, but why should we excuse, if I won't tolerate that kind of friend in my own personal life, somebody that's anti-Semitic or somebody that is... racially prejudiced, if I won't tolerate that in my own life, why in the world would I tolerate it in a reporter? You know, why would I do that? And how can you defend somebody like that? You know, would you defend a friend if they all of a sudden you had some friend that you had, this, you know, a lifelong friend, and all of a sudden you found out that they really were anti-Semitic, or, and then they started talking that way, or they really were racially prejudiced, and it was obvious that they were sincerely racially prejudiced? Would you still be friends with them? Would that alter your relationship with them? Or would you be attracted if you just met somebody and on the surface it seemed like, oh, this, I have a lot in common with this person, and then all of a sudden you know, you find out that not long into it, you find out that they're anti-Semitic or they're racially prejudiced or whatever else. Would you still be friends with them? I wouldn't, you know, I'm repelled by stuff like that. And I'm not trying to say I'm a good person, because I'm not. I'm just as flawed as anybody else is, but there's just something about that type of thinking that just I find disturbing, and I don't want to be around somebody like that, because they've got a warped, typically people like that have a warped view of the world. They have a warped view of reality. And, you know, if you're willing to kind of go along with that kind of thinking, you know, just so that, you know, maybe they suck on your ego in a certain way, and you're willing to kind of tolerate that kind of a fault, a glaring fault, and then you're just playing a little game with them. I'm okay, you're okay, kiss my butt, I'll kiss yours. But why would we tolerate that in reporters? You know, there's nothing. What's defensible about that? So anyway, let's go ahead. We're getting close to the end here, and I'm going to have to be leaving here in about 15 minutes. But in any case, let's go ahead and play this final comment from Scott. It's 5 minutes 49 seconds. So here's Scott once again.
Okay, Tom, I wanted to make a quick comment on podcast. I'm kind of going through your podcast now, starting with the latest and working backwards. And these are made when you were at home here in the beginning of June. And this one, you're talking about a bunch of different things, but one of the things you got into was hard drives and how they can just go on you. Out of the clear blue, you know, that click of death thing. But, Tom, it is possible to monitor the health of your hard drive. And I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but there's a program called SpinWrite. Steve Gibson writes it, and it's a miracle program. It'll do two things. One, it'll tell you how healthy your drive is by telling you how many points are damaged, how many sectors and tracks and things. Because what hard drives do as a part of their normal job, I don't know if you know this, but this is one of the things they kept saying about, you know, you're never going to get a 300 gigabyte drive, and you're never going to get a terabyte drive. And the reason is that keeping track of all of these little parts of the hard drive that can and do go bad all the time, and you don't even know about it because there's programs running, running on your hard drive in its own internal software. The controller is what's doing this. This programming, if a sector becomes bad, or looking the least bit bad, it will take the data in there and then it'll move it over to another sector. And then it'll mark that other sector as bad and won't use it anymore. And this is going on all the time. Things go bad. There's also encoding schemes, much like a CD or a DVD. There's an interleave and an encoding scheme where there's error correction. So even if you can't read some of the data, it can be recovered by the fact that this error correction routine will recover it. So if the drive sees that it's getting this error, it can't get all the data, it'll get it via the error correction routine and then write it somewhere else and mark that bad. And so even when you buy a brand new hard drive, there's a crap load of that drive that is bad. You might not think so, but on a terabyte or a 2 or 2.5 or whatever, these huge drives, it's unimaginable how much bad stuff there is when they're brand new. And what happens as you go along is that more and more of these sectors start becoming bad because it's becoming worn. And you find that each day the number of sectors that go bad is increasing and increasing and increasing. But the hardware in it continues doing its thing and finding them, moving the stuff elsewhere. And when you get a hard failure is when, let's say, a whole large strip of the information goes bad and it can't correct, or if it's in a vital place and it can't read that, you know, let's say the boot sector of the drive, and it can't read that anymore, and it didn't get a chance to move the stuff around, and then you get that click, click, click. That's the drive trying over and over and over again to reread something using this built-in error correcting and resolving software that's built into the controller, either the SATA controller or the IDE controller.
Okay, let me interrupt. Yes, I was aware that there is internal software in hard drives, and it's exactly as you say. And you can, you know, there is SpinRite. I've heard of that. It's been around for a long time, Steve Gibson program. You know, and so that is available if you, you know, you're really concerned about a hard drive. But it's been my experience. I've seen hard drives that have just out and out failed. I mean, you know, where the drive head is actually banging against the internally and against the side of the drive, and it makes a sick, you know, knocking sound. Click, 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 click. You know. And then I've seen drives that are slowly failing, you know, so that they slow way down and it takes forever for the computer to boot. Then you get all kinds of, you know, different error messages. So, you know, for the average person, I mean, I've never had SpinRite. Maybe I have. I'm trying to think. Maybe long, long time ago I might have had it. Years and years ago, but you know, these days I think they have improved the reliability of drives, but nonetheless you should be backing up your data. It's just important. If you've got something that you spent hours on typing something in, or you've spent hours and hours, you know, you have hours many hours tied up in your computer, you know, where you've created data or whatever, or you just changed the configuration around or whatever it is, you should be backing it up. And a lot of people don't. You know, I hear stories every day where people don't have stuff backed up, and today it's easier than ever. We do have these giant drives, but they're so cheap, there's really no excuse for not having just, you know, rudimentary backup. Is just back it up to an external drive. Have multiple copies of it. So, you know, but people, you know, there are a number of people that just don't do that. But there are utilities like the SpinRite program that Scott's talking about that you can get. You have to buy it, and then you can kind of monitor your drive and see kind of what's going on with it. Sort of monitor the health of it, but it's been my experience that the vast majority of hard drives that I've dealt with over the years outlive the computers that they're in. For the most part, most of the drives I've dealt with over the years, and there's been many of them, they continue to work, and they usually, the vast majority of them, they end up either, you know, going with the computer. Let's say I sell the computer, or the computer just gets set aside because the drives are too small, you know, because the size of them continues to grow. It's, you know, the first computer I had was a Radio Shack color computer, you know, and then the first IBM compatible computer I had was a 286. I bought it from DAC. Remember DAC? The DAC catalog? They'd send it in the mail. You'd have these DAC advertisements in the computer magazines. Remember those? Where this guy would give these really long descriptions about the hardware, and he'd just really pump you up and get you excited about what he was selling at the incredible low price. So the first computer that I had, I ordered from DAC, from that DAC catalog. It was an IBM clone. It was Packard Bell 286. And how big was the hard? It had an incredible, it was 40 megabytes. And the way that guy wrote that up, I can't remember his name now, it's Steve something. But the way he wrote that up, 40 megabyte hard, you'll never need another hard drive in your life. You can't fill that up. If you could write and write and write, and you'd never fill it up. It's just incredibly huge. 40 megabytes. 40 megabytes. You know, and then the size increased. I think the next, I don't remember, I went through a procession of computers, but I remember having one with a 200 megabyte hard drive and so on and so forth, and then it got to 1 point something, and then like a 3.5 gigabyte hard drive, and, you know, look at where we're at today. You know, we're up into 1 terabyte, 2 terabytes. You know, it's amazing. But nonetheless, you should be backing your machine up. If you got data, you should be backing it up. You know, and these things do fail. They're pretty reliable. But, you know, when they fail, they can either... I've had more of them that simply failed outright than I have had, you know, the slow torturous death. But they can go either way.
The controller itself has that built in. Okay, this is where Steve Gibson comes in. He is a nuts and bolts kind of guy. He does that security podcast. He got into the actual workings of this controller, the commands that it responds to, and so forth, and he wrote a program that tells it to go out there looking for sectors that are going bad, for ones that are already bad, giving a count so you can literally get the health of your hard drive, and you can keep track of the health of your hard drive as it becomes progressively less healthy. You think that a hard drive just goes bad, boom, overnight. No, that's just when it was the last straw that broke the camel's back. That's all you know from your perspective. But if you run this program of Steve's, you'll be able to literally watch your hard drive deteriorate if you run it often enough, because it gives you that information. SpinRite, program I highly recommend. It runs in DOS. I don't know how it runs with these newer drives. I don't know. It may still run fine with these 1 terabyte drives. You'll have to look on his website to get full details, but I know he's still selling it. And, oh, also I should tell you, if a hard drive goes into that mode where it's going clickety-clackety-clickety, I've had them like this from clients, this SpinRite program isn't just about monitoring the health of your drive. It's about repairing it. And what it'll do is it will try over and over and over. You got nothing to lose if the drive's bad, right? So, you know, there's been times when somebody's drive is fairly fried and a lot of files lost. And I'll go in, I've used SpinRite, and I'll run the thing. And it'll take a couple of days to run on these older drives. I'm talking 50 gigabyte drives or less. Not that big a drive. And it would take, I don't know how long it would take to run now, but it took a couple of days to run. Retrying, doing what it did, but ultimately when it finally completed, the drive ran again. And I've had this happen not just once. I've had it run a number of times and fixed drives. And so I became a believer. So this is just something I've learned along the lines of my consulting and I've used in my consulting. And I wanted to point that out to you. Highly recommend it. Steve Gibson, and the program is SpinRite.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. You know, now if I was just going to say, I was thinking there, you know, I think, you know, you can, one time I heard this tip, and I actually tried it, and as I recall, it actually worked. I had a drive that kind of quit working. I don't remember exactly, you know, the symptoms, but it sort of quit. And I heard this tip. What you do, you take the drive, you put it in a sealed, you know, one of these sandwich bags that you can actually seal and get it, you know, get as much air out of that bag as you can before you seal it, and put that bag in the freezer and leave it in there for, you know, maybe 24 hours so that drive gets good and cold. You know, and then after you've left it in there for a period of time, you know, more than 24 hours, take it out. Don't do anything with it. Just let it sit there in the bag. Don't take it out of the bag. Leave it in the bag, sealed in that sandwich bag that you've gotten as, you know, as much of the air out of as possible before you started this. And there's a good chance that that drive may work again. And that's only in the case if the drive is seized up. And now as I've talked about this a little bit, that drive, I did have this drive one time that it actually had seized up,
And you can try the freezer trick to get it to unseize. And if that drive works, if you can get it to work again, you'd better be getting the data off of it. And so if you were talking there at the end, you know, recovering a drive, you know, getting it to, you know, running the SpinRite program, getting it to work again, you'd better get your data off of it. Don't try to use that drive and think, oh, I've ran this SpinRite program and now the drive works again. I can just continue to use it. Get your data off of it. If it was worth going through 2 days worth of waiting for that program to run, then, and it started working, magically started working again, get the data off of it. Because it's a dead drive. It's just practically dead. Basically, this program performed CPR on it and got it going again. Get the data off of it. But apart from buying a utility like that, just back up your, you know, the drives are cheap today. Back up your data. You can never have too many backups. Just back your data up. Back it up two or three places. Course, if you really want to be safe, you know, you should take that data and take it to a different place in case your house burns down or something happens. You don't want all your backups in the same place because something could happen calamitous and destroy. If you've got all of those backups in one place, then that could be destroyed. So it's probably, if you really want to be safe, put one in a safety deposit box and kind of rotate it out periodically. Take it to relatives or a friend's house or whatever. Rotate it around. You know, if you're really serious about your data. But certainly if you've got business data, you know, you should be, you know, really taking that seriously because that is your business. So anyway, probably better be cutting this off. It's 2:42 Central Time, so it's 3:42 Eastern Time. So, and I'm about, that GPS said I was about less than 5 miles from where I'm going to be, that warehouse. So, I'm going to be heading over there. So, I'll time it so that I get there just after 4 a.m. Eastern Time. And then they'll let me in, and they'll have me back into the dock, and so on and so forth. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.